There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Monday. Another great week to work with here. And hi, I'm Sean. Glad you're here. We're streaming online, fmtalk1065.com, plus a podcast of plenty. We'll talk about that. Like, if you want to go back and listen to Bill Finch's fabulous show from yesterday, it's waiting for you on our podcast tab on fmtalk1065.com. Plus, you can get it on the subscription services. We'll talk, remind you of those from time to time. Coming up on today's show, if you're just joining us, I talked to Jeff about it, but in hour number two, my buddy John Sharp from AL.com joins me, did a really good story about the areas that may be impacted by Highway 43 getting four-laned, so north of Thomasville, and what that means. We'll get into that with him in hour number two, plus Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, joins us here in just a few minutes. And yes, it is the Ides of March, which, by the way, so, I mean, that was Shakespeare's, right? So Shakespeare did the old Beware of the Ides of March, you know, and of course it is stuck, and politicians getting stabbed in the back. But I guess it really doesn't hold the significance now since, well, there's a chance that that happens every day in Washington or Montgomery, so they're not worried about it. But yeah, so today, the Ides of March. Let me, Todd's going to join us here in a second, and we'll talk, obviously, a lot of Alabama politics, but I want to give a preface here, just a quick one, because this is something that hopefully this week we'll be talking about, is HB 238. So this is interesting. This was sent to me. So House Bill 238 that is brought by Representative Shavers says it's to deal with no-wake areas and idle speed, okay? So we know, I mean, a lot of people on the water. My gosh, folks got on the water this weekend. At least that's the story I was told by the rest of the family. I was incapacitated, not able to do that, but a lot of people on the water. Listen to this. So this is part of that bill. And like I said, we're going to try to get through to Representative Shavers and talk about this with the Congresswoman later on in the week. It says here, it is unlawful for a person to operate a vessel or personal watercraft in the waters of this state greater than 300 feet wide and greater than idle speed within 100 feet of any of the following. So if y'all aren't boaters, right now we are told areas that are idle speed, right? You have buoys, you have signage, idle speed. It's ignored a lot of times, but it shouldn't be, and it's a ticket if it's not. So you have idle speed, you got to slow it down, right? Slow it down to idle speed, not throwing a wake. Okay. Says, so once again, this new law would say you have to run idle speed if you're within 100 feet of any of the following: a moored or anchored boat, or any boat that is adrift. So tied off on a pole or anchored or drifting. B, a dock, pier, or bridge. C, a person in the water. D, the shoreline. F, the public park or beach. G, a marina, restaurant, or other public use area. G, a vessel designated for use by law enforcement officer while making use of visual signals while alongside another vessel. So there's a whole bunch more to this, but just think about that. 100 feet, so 100 feet of distance. Believe me, I'm frustrated by people who run through no wake zones going too fast or going above idle speed as it is. But if you're 100 feet away from a dock, a pier, or a bridge, you have to be running idle. So every bridge you go under, you have to run idle. Any boat that is drifting or anchored or moored, you'd have to just picture somewhere like Dog River. What would it take you to get from say you're going to put in up at Navco, okay, and you're going to go out to the bay. How long would it take you if you're following those rules to make it through there? If in all those situations, you had to be at idle. So we talk about this. It's actually a pretty long bill. That's just, I'm giving you just a little bit of it. And we'll dig into it this week. But I thought it was of note. If you want to look into it, it's HB 238. Representative Jenny Schaefer has brought this legislation, and it's going to be going to hearing on Wednesday up on Goat Hill. So we'll try to get more info before then. Also, I just thought about this, too. As the story, you just heard the news update that people are starting to get their stimulus checks, right? Starting to get the next round of stimulus checks. Just think, Montgomery, just think if we already had gambling. Already, Alabamians could be blowing their checks in Alabama casinos. They could be blowing their checks on Alabama lotto tickets. They could be blowing their money on March Madness bets right here in Alabama. But now they have to risk the dangerous roadways to take that money out of state. Think about that, all right? I mean, this is, look at all this money coming, you know, this borrowed money that's coming here to people in Alabama. We right now could be just handing that money over. We could just be gambling that money. The revenues would be there. But we're, that revenue, when people get their stimulus and think, okay, here's what I'm going to do. Here's how I make it big. I'm going to take my stimulus money, and I'm going to take that to the casino, and then I'm going to double it. And then I'm going to double that again, and then cha-ching, money in the pocket, right? So that brilliant financial move that I just described is now going to be taken to other states, not here at home. So we've missed the boat on that one. So I just wanted to point out Alabama. I don't know that we'll get anything done, but we're missing a great opportunity right now for the state to take money from people that want to risk a game. All right, coming back, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News. So much to talk about with him. Lots to get through from another week in Montgomery to look at. Also, we'll look in the rear view and talk Washington as well. It's all straight ahead. I'm glad you're here. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Get to my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, in just a second here. Some breaking news. And sad news from our news partners at WKRG. Former five-term Mobile County Sheriff has died, Tom Purvis. Man, he was a good part of my life was Mobile County Sheriff. Tom Purvis, 85 years old, served as a sheriff of Mobile County for two decades, from 1975 to 1995. Purvis passed away peacefully at his home this morning, his family told WKRG News 5. He's survived by his wife, four children, two grandchildren, and one great-grandchild. So the passing of Tom Purvis at 85 this morning. All right, my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, and a man that is, he's in the trenches of Montgomery. They got this week, and then what? Spring break's coming, isn't it?
Yeah. We're nearing the halfway point of the legislature. They'll reach that this week. Now, that's halfway in terms of the number of meeting days they have. They'll actually be able to meet up until May 17th. But in terms of the days expended from the session, yeah, they'll reach the halfway point this week and then break for spring break on Thursday.
So you've talked about it, and the chatter is higher that in addition to this, we're gonna be looking at a special, right?
Well, we know there'll at least be a special session for the redistricting.
Yeah, for the census data that's slow to come out.
Right. Yeah. They're not even going to know, you know, what the districts look like by the time the session ends. We might have the congressional data, maybe. Of course, there are lawsuits going on right now about that because it's hard to understand the inconsistency or the delay, really. But I honestly, Sean, I think we're probably going to have more special sessions. And I know... Look, I kept predicting one last year, and it never happened. But you know, we have 2 years worth of legislative issues to catch up on this year. I just don't think they're going to get it all done in the regular session. Plus, you've got some stand, you know, one-off issues like the redistricting, like prisons, if they ever try to do something with that, and gambling. You know, they couldn't get the gambling bill through the Senate. I don't think Senator Marsh is done with that. I don't think the governor's done with that. And so you might could see a special session on gambling. And they would be that would be really interesting to see her get more involved, because really the whole way the bill went down, I mean, it was Del Marsh. There weren't a whole bunch of it was not some huge coalition of people. I mean, maybe behind the scenes that was more true, but there wasn't, you know, we had some statements from the governor and she was supportive, but it was less than, you know, full throated. So I think that could be a special session topic.
So, I mean, we could maybe see three. We could see three special sessions.
Maybe. I mean, it just depends. And, you know, they can also do more than one issue at a time. If she called one for redistricting that we know we're going to have, they could always tackle another issue. Generally speaking, I think that's a bad idea unless one is really non-controversial. Because, you know, the whole point of a special session is to focus intently on one issue and leave all the others aside. You take away the opportunities for, you know, for somebody kind of holding something hostage to get something they want on the other bill. So that, generally, I think that's a bad idea, but it's always possible.
All right. We could talk more about that in just a little bit when we talk gaming. But I do your leadoff story in the email today, and this is something you and I have talked about over the years. But you point out with $940 million coming out of the American, that's what we're calling the $1.9 trillion bill, right? That's the American Rescue Plan?
That's what the bill title is called, the American Rescue Plan Act, actually. So it's a little bit clunky, but that's what it is.
So ARPA and has a cape on it because it's rescuing us. Here it comes. It means when you boil it down to a state level, you said, we'll talk about the overall number, but you say here an additional $940 million over a two-year span for the Alabama Medicaid agency if it expands. All right. Break this down for us, that money, and what this perennial of Medicaid expansion, what does this really mean? I think people hear that a lot and may not know what that means.
Well, Medicaid expansion means that you just offer more people access to it. You raise the income threshold a little bit. Right now, there's about 1 million people in Alabama that are enrolled in Medicaid, and it's for pretty low-income people, very, very low-income people and disabled people, and the majority of enrollees are children. So expansion means you raise the threshold of income. I don't have that number in front of me, but so that more people can access that. There is a gap, right? There's a gap of folks that are they make a little too much money to be on Medicaid, but can't afford health insurance on their own. So that's what the goal of an expanded Medicaid would be. But it's not free, it costs money. And the state generally picks up about 72% of those new enrollees costs, or all enrollees costs, say about 72%. I'm sorry, the federal government picks up that percent. The state picks up the rest. So if you remember back during Obamacare, they were trying to coerce states into expanding their Medicaid populations. And so they said, okay, we're going to pay 100% of all these new enrollees costs for the first 4 years, and then it will kind of stair step down after that. And that was the carrot. Alabama didn't do that, and one of 14 states that never did that. So they're coming back with another carrot, but this one's different. This one says we're going to increase the amount we pay the feds for everybody, for all your enrollees, by 5%. That would bring it up to 77% of the total. And that we actually had a 6% increase this year. That was just COVID related. The government said, okay, we're going to give you that. So it's already sitting at 78, and I think the state saw $250 million in savings just 1 year. So that's what the carrot is. They're saying, okay, we are going to come in and pay not just for the new enrollees, but everybody a larger percentage, which that is a big deal. That's $940 million. But again, after 2 years, that goes away. Their advocates are saying that is enough to pay for 4 years at least of these new enrollees. But the opponents say, well, what happens after that?
And what does happen after that? That's a question. Once once that new beachhead is established, right, that we say here's the new income limit, we raise that, people getting in, I guess they can run the math, right, after 4 years, what the annual for those folks would be.
Yeah,
the state's
and that's
part.
Right. It's hard to really calculate because there are multiple factors there. Number one, more people are going to the doctor. More people are going to hospitals. All that ends up in tax revenue, you know, rather than all that going to the emergency room, right? And that tends to take away profit margins. So there is, you do end up with a bumped revenue, and expansion states saw that, but I don't know if you can put a dollar sign on it. It's going to cost the state money. The question is the governor and to some degree lawmakers are going to have to figure out is it all worth it? I think a few people argue that it would be nice to have more people insured.
Sure.
And you can't argue that $940 million is pretty nice, you know, free money for now. But what happens in the long term, and does the state have a plan to afford it?
Yeah, and that's the question. I mean, people, and this, like you pointed out, during the Obama years, well, it was during the Bentley years when we said no, and every other, well, not every other state, because there were 13 others that said no, but there were a lot of states that got on board back then. Is this enough to move the needle? Do you talk to people, talk to Republicans in Montgomery? Is this enough to change opinions?
I don't know. You know, the same coalition that has always supported Medicaid expansion, meaning, you know, the medical association, the hospitals, many in the business community, they're the same. And I think if you read the story, the comment from the governor's office is pretty much the same, saying, hey, I'm open to the discussion, but you know, nobody's explained how we're going to afford this. So it's too early to say that they're leaning one way or the other, but it is, this new incentive has just sparked the conversation again, you know, after the passage of this bill.
Well, they'll be able to get gambling revenue, right? It's just gonna, it fixes everything.
Well, I mean, well, that's a good example of the conversation because, you know, so much of that gambling revenue in Senator Marsh's bill was all for broadband, right? We got to get broadband out there. And there are other issues. There's a lot of people want most of that to go to education. Here's a healthcare situation where we've talked about this in the past, you know, in terms of gambling revenue and, you know, sometimes where that tends to come from. Why shouldn't it go back to helping, you know, the same populations? So I think those are exactly the kind of things you're going to start seeing. You know, I think gambling was out there sort of on its own, but as these other issues come in, you may start to see senators and others say, all right, well, let's throw a little bit of that revenue over this way.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, of course, we've got to get the gaming bill passed here. And I want we'll save that probably for after the news break at the bottom of the hour. Just about a minute left here. You also wrote that the pandemic redefines public access to government meetings. Yeah, that's been a big question. I mean, whether it be Montgomery or down at City Hall here in Mobile.
It is, and it's, you know, it's frustrating a lot of folks. I think everybody appreciates that they're in a tough situation, right? They want to try to be safe and protect people and obey the rules, you know, so to speak. But patience is kind of starting to wear thin because they're debating big issues. I mean, taxes and gambling, I mean, big deals. And nobody's in the building except for a handful of lobbyists they let into the committee rooms. And so, you know, the press, we've tried to do a good job of laying it all out there. They have cameras and audio, but if you've ever tried to listen, sometimes it can be really spotty. So it's been a tough year. We just need to make sure that the next year we actually get back to normal.
Yes, and we got to
don't let these rules become just a commonplace, you know.
Right, right, and people will say, well, you know, it worked out before, so let's keep it going that way. Let's not do that. Coming right back, more with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. His Swell email, they'll tell you how to get signed up for that. It's for free, and it definitely puts you on the right foot each day, knowing what's going on here at home and in Washington.
This This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, right back to it. Our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And Todd, how do people get signed up for your email?
It's really easy, and we got a brand new server, and we're rocking and rolling. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click sign up at the top of the page. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. You'll be glad you did.
For sure. And it's always good. But obviously, this time of year, when you have both the Washington news and you have the legislature in session in Montgomery, it's super important. I want to talk money for a second. So we talked money there, what that $940 million that could be available for Medicaid expansion. But what the overall money that Alabama is supposed to get from this American Rescue stimulus package, $4 billion?
Yeah. And look, we reported this, broke the news on, I guess, on Thursday or Friday.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've been through a long week of session. Congress had just done this, and the president signed it. But we kept asking the question, what does this mean? Because they included, in the bill, Congress included $350 billion, with a B, to be directed to state and local governments. Well, Alabama's portion of that is $4 billion, $4.043 billion. It's divided up. A lot of it goes directly toward metropolitan cities, smaller cities and counties, right? Like Mobile's portion is going to go straight to Mobile, and so will other, you know, counties and smaller cities. But $2.1 billion is earmarked specifically for a state relief fund. Probably a lot like last time. But last time that was 1.7. And $192 million will go toward a state capital projects fund. So they want the state and local governments to spend this money on things,
right?
On, you know, building things. And so it's, if you think about it, that is just a staggering amount of money.
It's insane.
So
what's our budget? I mean, let's compare. So $4 billion, and the annual budget for the state of Alabama is what, $2 billion?
Well, for the general fund, yeah, general it's about fund. $2.4 billion. 2.4. For education, it's about $7.6.
But the general fund, this is basically, when I saw that number, it's like twice our general fund budget.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a little less than twice. And if you think about it, so in last year's, you know, about this time last year, they passed the CARES Act.
Mm-hmm.
And the state got about $1.9 billion from that. Now, part of that also went to Jefferson County, which is the only place large enough to get direct. So the state got about $1.7 billion, and we could hardly spend it, you know?
Yep.
So, now, part of that was because they had such strict rules on how you could spend it. You couldn't replace revenue, had to be spent by December 31st. A lot of those same rules aren't in this plan. In fact, they have until 2024 to spend this money. So, look, we were asking around last week, just, what y'all, to the lawmakers and to the governor.
What y'all going to do with all that?
And there's not really an answer. I mean, I think, you know, we all, assuming that the gambling bill passed, they, you know, everybody was giddy about that amount of money coming in. And here's $4 billion, especially, you really ought to put it, as far as the legislature goes, 2.3 from the legislature is about what they're going to get, $2.3 billion. That's still just a crazy amount of money, especially at a time when our budgets are doing fine. You know, we didn't have this kind of crazy drop off. Our
right.
budgets are small increases from last year. So it's a staggering amount of money. It will be very interesting to see where they want to put it.
You mentioned one part of it that got my attention when I first heard it. So the what's it called? The state capital fund or that portion that you mentioned at first. What was it called?
Yeah. The state capital projects fund.
And that's AL, not OL, right?
Yes.
But could capital AL fund be used on OL? In other words, you know, what Governor Ivey did would early on in the discussion of the CARES Act money and said, they're talking about redoing the state house with this money, yada, yada, yada. Could it end up that there is money to redo the state house out of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, I was part of those that lampooning that went on. We ran a cartoon. I mean,
right.
Dale's probably still sore with me. But honestly, as this year has gone on, and I don't know where the other spending of that money is going to happen, I'd be for it. I'd be just fine with it. I mean, I don't know how much it would cost to build a new state house. I think it, you know, this kind of cash maybe combined with some kind of smaller bond. But I'm telling you, it is. We've seen just in this last year how necessary it is, because people can't access their lawmakers. They, you know, if you believe in that fundamental importance of open government, we have a really raw deal, because we are in this janked up building that was never intended to be the permanent home of the legislature. It was a temporary building built by prison labor. Yeah. I mean, it's so, yeah, I wouldn't mind it. Now, clearly the COVID money that was meant for COVID in the middle of an emergency, clearly that wasn't right. This is the federal government giving us cash saying, please go spend this money.
Right. So, I mean, it does not have those earmarks or those guidelines that the CARES Act money does, right? I understand this is just kind of like y'all finds. This is crazy. Hey, states, just spend some money.
The only thing they can't do with it, I'm sure there are other important rules, but compared to the CARES Act, the one thing that stands out is they can't spend it on tax cuts, right? They can't take this money and say, all right, we're lowering everybody's taxes and just replacing the revenue with that. That's against the rules. So everything else, it seems like if you can somehow tie it to COVID or tie it to what you need to recover from COVID, then you can spend it.
Well, I mean, just, I can imagine sitting there in the legislature and basically being handed another annual general fund budget. Hey, y'all go spend this.
Yeah, and remember, they did a second CARES Act.
Yep.
In December, and that was when Republicans were still in control, and that was the whole bill was $600 billion, and they gave $0 to state and local governments because
they still had money.
We didn't need it, yeah, and we were still spending it. And so, I guess there's two types of lawmakers, right? Ones that look forward to this kind of spending, and ones that kind of roll their eyes. And I'm doing a little bit of both, but. In any case, we got to spend it. I mean, we'd be foolish not to. And so it will be interesting. Maybe the state comes up with some kind of way to school construction. We're in the middle of a school construction bond right now. Maybe there were some areas that could have been bigger. Maybe we get a break on some of these prison.
There we go. That, I was waiting how long it would take you. I mean, let's talk about the prison issue. I mean, this is a game changer for that discussion.
It could be.
It's not popular. I know it's not popular spreading it here and there. And look, you get a new park and you get a swing set and you get a. But what is threatening our state right now is a situation with the judge and the DOJ and our prison system. I know that that's not fun stuff to do, but you know, it's not fun to make your house note, but you better.
Yeah, but it's going to be a lot of not fun when they do a takeover and
correct
put us into receivership or something like that.
Why can you and I agree? Why can you and I sit here, right, and get that? And it see like have they dealt with prisons yet in session? No,
they've done some reforms, but I mean, again, it's really hard to put like huge prison reforms in. It's hard for them to agree on them. Because they've done most of the sentencing stuff. They've done most of the changes that put nonviolent people in jail. Now, right now, they could completely repeal the Habitual Offenders Act, which the Democrats have really honed in on wanting to do, but Republicans are going to resist that. So maybe this could take care of some of that debt, you know, that we would be coming into, but I don't know. We will see. It's been too early for anybody to have a real hard, solid plan.
Now, like you said, yeah, I can't believe it. You talked to legislators and they didn't even have an idea what they'd spend it on. That's a rare
one. Well, they're just now kind of figuring out, wow, they're budgeting for this year. I mean, so this week in legislature, this is budget week. They're going to be talking about the budgets. And then, oh, by the way, here's $2.3 billion you're also going to need to allocate. So I don't blame them for not having a real good idea.
Wow. All right, and before we wrap up here, I want to talk a little bit of what's going on in Washington, even though that is exactly what we just did, is we talked Washington. But you have a story this morning that FEMA, right, that President Biden has now brought FEMA in to help at the border. So the Federal Emergency Management Agency, right, Emergency Management Agency going to the border, but the president's saying that all's well on the border. Help square that with me.
Well, yeah, they kind of, the press kind of had him in a, or the press secretary in a tight spot saying, so do you call this an emergency? It's like, well, no. Like, well,
but you're sending FEMA. Yeah.
look, I shouldn't laugh about it. This is a serious situation. I remember this when I was working in Congress years ago, and it's a horrible situation because these children endure a really hard journey. You know, I think anybody with common sense looks at this and says, well, we know why they're arriving. The Biden administration made it clear on the campaign how he was going to treat this. They're not going to send them back. And, you know, we used to argue sometimes back then during the Obama years, the most humane thing you could do is send them back to be able to send a message that others shouldn't come and shouldn't, you know, have that dangerous journey. I think the FEMA, I mean, I'm glad they're going.
But why can't another division, I guess, you know, why can't Homeland Security, why can't ICE do the same thing? What is FEMA able to do that they can't?
It's housing, right? So FEMA has all these trailers and, you know, temporary housing places, and that's what they lack right now. They don't have enough housing for all these folks. They're putting them in cages, you know, except nobody will call them cages. They're cages under Trump. Now they're temporary facilities.
Right, yes.
I think that's, you know, FEMA, they're good at bringing in shelter, bringing in food, bringing in, you know, supplies. That's what they do well. And so that to me, that makes sense.
Now, will these, if FEMA comes in with like FEMA trailers like they did after Katrina, and you're putting these illegal immigrants, children or whatever in those, will there be locks on the doors, or will they be able to come and go?
Well, good question.
So there's locks on the door, so it's a cage too. I mean,
is it a cage? Is it a fiberglass cage?
What are you supposed to? I mean, we're talking semantics here. It's my frustration, right? If you're taking these children and you're holding them because you can't just let them go, and you're not sending them back, if you put them in anything, I want the kids to be taken care of. I mean, you have to be empathetic, you have to be decent, but if they're in a double wide that's locked up, if the double wide's locked up, it's a cage too, right? Am I not getting
something?
I'm
with you, and I think the most frustrating thing is, you know, they won't admit just why we got here, and it's so obvious. You just look at his rhetoric on the campaign trail.
He did it to himself, absolutely.
And so, and the lesson was there. The lesson was there during the Obama years. If you say you're going to be lax on immigration, if you say you're going to legalize everybody or have this DACA situation, then yeah, it's a magnet. Of course they are. So, you know, I think it starts another conversation about immigration in this country. Everybody wanted to label Trump as just so cruel, and Jeff Sessions along with him. The end effect of their policies, cruel as they may have been or as harsh as they may have been, were to deter people from coming to this country illegally. That it worked.
So they're not cruel, though. If they're enforcing the law of this republic, then the law, if you're going to say that, I don't agree, but then the law is cruel, because what they're doing is enforcing the law. It is insane to me that enforcing the law has, you know, become something of a pejorative to say they're enforcing the law.
Well, it's interesting, the law is complicated here. It's basically an anti-human trafficking law. If somebody would show up at the border with a child, the welfare of the child was prioritized over the adult. And so, separation is in the law because it's an anti-human trafficking law. Now, that probably needs to be updated. That law probably needs to be revisited.
Okay, then legislature, do your work.
Right, but they won't do that.
Right.
It's just too easy to say Donald Trump's putting kids in cages and separating families. But the point is that building a wall, building a fence, having strict immigration policies did deter people from coming. That's the decision we have to make as a country, and we're just so far apart on it. We're so far, you know, half the country thinks that there should be no border and, you know, come on in, and the other half wants it to be as it always has been.
But then make them take the vote right now.
We have borders.
Make them take the vote. I mean, Democrats have, you know, if they're getting everything else they want pushed through, then take the vote.
Well,
change the law.
Let's not forget that the 2022 elections are coming.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming fast. And this plus the whole, you know, opening of schools and stuff like this, these are ways Republicans can make a real difference in taking back the majorities. Same thing happened in 2010. The key is to be smart about your rhetoric, have a plan, point out the alternatives, and let the smart people talk. Don't let the crazies talk. You don't want Louie Gohmert down there on the border. Have somebody with some sense. But this can be an inflection point if it keeps happening, and it looks like it will, where you reach a point where common sense people say, "All right, we put Democrats in charge of the country, and within months it's falling apart."
Yep. Todd, as always, I appreciate our time. We'll be talking to you again real soon. Remind folks once again the website.
ALDailyNews.com. We'd love to have you as a subscriber.
Good stuff. Take care. Keep them in line.
All right, John, be good.
All right, you too. All right, coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Grab your calls at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Go say hello to my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM. Another great week to work with, Larry. How's inventory looking?
Inventory's great. It's going to get better. We got eight new vehicles coming in this afternoon, as a matter of fact, late this afternoon.
So you're constantly restocking because you're telling me that folks are coming in and picking up vehicles on the regular.
Absolutely. Sales have been great, and it's been a mixed bag. I mean, there's nothing that I would say is just singled out. Everybody, it's a little bit of trucks, cars, SUVs, and we've got all the above.
Yeah, because I know there's sometimes you and I have talked to you said, well, it's more this and more that, but right now it's just across the board.
Absolutely. It is completely across the board, and we've got quite a few requests. Matter of fact, that's what we've been doing all morning, is on the computer trying to find some vehicles for a couple customers.
All right, going out and finding. So people come see you for that, looking at the inventory, talking financing. How do they find you?
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Business online at lcmotorcars.com. They can like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. Right, a lot of texts coming in here as well. Let's see. So, this unnamed texter said gas prices are going to help the Republicans in 2022 as well. Sure, that will be a good kitchen table politics there. But, I mean, this question on the border. You know, I don't spend a ton of time talking about the border. I think if you've listened to any period of time, know that I'm a rule of law guy. I'm also, like we should all be, compassionate to other human beings. But the people get called mean days. They're uncompassionate, right? But they're enforcing the law. So if Democrats are going to scream at the top of their lungs about then you know what? Take the votes, Democrat. Go take the votes. Go on the record and take the votes. To have what they're doing is enforcing the law, and do it. And if you bring trailers down with FEMA or something, put the same time if you lock that trailer up. There's still wards of the federal government, right? So let's just say real things. Let's not play games here. Let's say real things. And you know what? If anybody from Jen Psaki in a press conference or anywhere else acts like there's some reason that they should be surprised that the people are showing up in greater numbers right now, come on. I mean, what was it, a couple of weeks ago? The folks showed up at the border and they were wearing, like, it was the Biden, President Biden, but the campaigns, the way it had Biden laid out with the same font and everything, it's like Biden let us in. They had T-shirts made and signs. They showed, where in this grueling journey that you think about the stress you must be under to try to do that for your family, but that grueling journey, where along the line did you stop for T-shirts and signs to do that? So, I wish somebody would force if the Republicans up there said, hey, you don't like this, you're going to impugn everybody, you're going to impugn our folks with ICE, you're going to impugn the people that are working for us on the board. They're enforcing the law, so change the law. If you think that to leave the law like this and not take a vote on it, because they know they wouldn't pass it. So they're going to just continue to needle and needle and needle, even though the person who's in charge of the whole thing now is not Donald Trump. President Joe Biden. I'm just looking for some clarity on that. All right. Hey, coming back next hour, John Sharp is going to join us. Great piece. I'm going to put this up on the Twitter feed as well. He has over at AL.com about Highway 43. So speaking of spending money, at the State of the State address, Governor Ivey said, infrastructure project, four-laning 43 north of Thomasville. What does that mean? John's done an in-depth dive on this, and we'll talk about it with him coming up next.